When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The memories.
The clock is down to 48 seconds. 20-10, Colorado leads Nebraska. They have waited a long time for this. So many times, the red flood has come into Folsom Field, and they have gone back across the border to the north, a winner. It won't be this time.
The story.
Prukop to the corner for Carrington, intercepted! Colorado got it! Witherspoon! With the biggest play in Colorado football for years!
And now, as a supplement to over 40 years worth of CU football coverage in the CU at the Game archives, here is Stewart with his CU at the Game podcast.
Greetings, Buff fans, from See You at the Game. This is Stuart White here, publisher and editor for the See You at the Game website, and your host for the See You at the Game podcast. March was a kind month to the University of Colorado, with the CU ski team winning its 21st national championship, and the CU men's and women's basketball teams both earning NCAA tournament berths for the first time since 2013. The CU football team, not to be outdone, opened its second set of spring practices under Coach Prime, earning some national headlines of their own. I am joined for this podcast by Brad Geiger and Neil Langland, and we begin by taking a look at some of the national stories surrounding Coach Prime this spring, including his book tour, the national story about his not taking off-campus visits to the homes of potential recruits, and his weighing in on his players and the NFL draft. We then shift back to campus and CU spring practices with a review of the comments made by Coach Prime, offensive coordinator Pat Shermer, and defensive coordinator Robert Livingston. We next discuss whether CU fans should be raving about men's basketball coach Tad Boyle's accomplishments, or whether this season is further proof that the Buffs under Boyle have a glass ceiling of success. We finish up with a tribute to the remarkable tournament run made by the CU women's team after a rough end to the regular season. It's always great to be a Buff, but even more so this spring. But is this as good as it gets for CU fans? Or are there even greater accomplishments and achievements ahead? Let's find out.
Okay, and we're back, and I'm joined by Highlands Ranch own Brad Geiger. How's Brad this evening?
Doing well, enjoying the end of March, and of course, the glorious sporting events that go on along with that time of year.
Okay, well, Neil, in like a lamb, out like a lion, Langland, in downtown Denver. How's Neil doing?
Doing well.
just enjoying the weather. Things are starting to bud here downtown. So it looks like spring is really here for a change.
Wow. Well, we had a blizzard this afternoon. So, you know, send pictures. but it's coming. It's a coming. That's the only difference is instead of snow coming in and staying for 3 days, the snow comes in and stays for 3 hours. So, you know, we're finally getting to the point where we get those spring kind of storms that go away and, you know, the sun comes back out. So kind of like January in Boulder. So that type of thing. So we're going to talk a little bit about spring football, spring basketball, all things that are CU. Congratulations to the ski team winning the national championship. You know, that's so CU sports, CU athletics is doing very well as we speak, but we primarily look at football. So we'll talk a little football. Spring practices underway, first week under their belts. And obviously we only know what they want to tell us, but there was a press conference where the CU media day, she got to talk to the coordinators and the head coach. So since Colorado is prime central or prime centric anyway, let's talk a little bit about Coach Prime in this spring and the off season that he's having. Was off on a book tour, did Jimmy Kimmel, and yet, you know, there was a question in the athletic mailbag about how he was flying under the radar this spring and not doing as well, and nobody's paying attention to him. So how do you guys feel about Coach Prime and how he's handled his spring so far?
Well, I mean, I got to say, this is only under the radar for Prime. You'd have to go back to peak Neuheisel era to have anything like this in the spring. Coach Neuheisel was never found a basket to hide his light under either. But he could only dream of the attention that Prime gets. So there may be somewhat less, but there's been plenty. Of course, the fact that cameras follow Coach Prime everywhere he goes. There has been some reporting about the football team, which is nice. And he, you know, about some of the things that he said to his team and some of what feels to me like maybe a little bit more tough love this season.
Okay. Well, Neil, have you bought the book? Coach of Prime's book that he was out on the national promotion tour?
I have not bought the book, but I intend to help support the cause. And, you know, I think Brad's right. Coach Prime's on a different scale than every other college coach because he's doing his thing in a way that's never been done before. So to try to judge him on that standard looks to me that he is still recruiting, still trying to get talent in here, regardless of the position. And, you know, he's being very frank that just like last year, we're not done in the portal and we're staying with it. And those are the things that I really want to hear. The rest of it is PR for the school and for his team and for his family. But that all helps CU. That all helps the football team. So it's, I think you have to be pleased with what he's been doing.
Okay. Well, Brad, it seems like some of the press is getting a little more negative. I don't know if you saw the CBS article. They were doing a CBS Sports, and they're doing it for all the teams in the Power Five, you know, one big question for the spring. And they did that for the Big 12. And the picture for the lead picture for the story was a picture of Coach Prime walking off the field after a loss. And I mean, he looked like somebody just shot his dog, you know. So for all the things that they could have had, you know, a picture of Cam Rising, they could have had a picture of Travis Hunter or Shadur for that matter, but they chose to put in Coach Prime in a dour, unhappy face. And when they talked about CU, they talked about, you know, the headline was, will the O-line at Colorado ever get better? And lamenting the fact that two of the starters had left for the transfer portal, which I think Buff fans would say, well, that's kind of like a news story about the Washington Generals losing two of their starters. You know, don't think that, not to cause any aspersions on any of the players, but I don't think losing starters from a team that gave up 56 sacks is, you know, necessarily bad news. But is it just me, or does it seem like the slant of things has been a little bit more negative about Colorado, or am I just being too sensitive?
No, I think there has been something of a recalibration. But if you recall, right after Prime was hired, there was some of this. There was a lot of, you know, it's all hype. There was a lot of how can he compete at, you know, the Power Five level. And then he won the first three games. And everybody forgot all of that stuff. And then there was some of that that came back towards the end. There's, you know, we didn't have a winning season last year. You can argue that the results didn't match the hype. So the fact that there was going to be a recalibration, and there are a certain number of people out there who don't find Coach Prime's personality to their liking. They have been waiting for failure, honestly, back to the moment that he touched an NFL field. There are people who didn't like him at Florida State.
Yeah.
None of this surprises me, and some of the criticism's legitimate. All right? You measure by winning, not by talking. I think Coach Prime would tell you that too. But he lives out there in the open a little bit more. You can't imagine Nick Saban showing off the new house he bought. you know, we expect this. And, you know, to some extent, I don't think anybody's going to knock down Prime's ego, but I think legitimate criticism of how the program's going is, as I said, legitimate.
Yeah. Well, Neil, I mean, some of it kind of cringeworthy for you, like when he talks about how he's going to guide Shadur and Travis, and they're only going to play for certain warm weather teams in the NFL, and they're going to pick which teams they play for, and that Shadur would have been the number two quarterback in the draft this year. I mean, is there some part of you that would like to just kind of whisper in the back, you know, whisper into his ear and say, you know, you may want to dial it back a little bit until you actually win some games? Or is this just Prime being Prime and we're a little more used to it than the national media?
Well, I'm going to argue both sides of it. The negative first, which is it seems too family focused to me. It seems too NFL focused, too focused on just a couple of players rather than the entire team. And right now, at this stage of development for the Buffs, I don't really care where people think our players are going to be drafted or where they're going to go. That's just sort of filler. Now, on the positive side, recruits, transfers, they want to go to the NFL. And they see Prime taking all of this effort to look after his players and get them to a point where they maximize their chances of being drafted and drafted at a fairly early stage of the draft. That has to help recruiting. That has to help the profile of the team and the program. So I think, you know, it's a bit bitter, but there's a little sweetness to offset it. So I'm cool with it.
Okay. Well, let me do one more national story, and then we'll talk about press conferences and what they're actually saying about football. There's a story in the USA Today that mentioned, or well, it was all about the fact that they confirmed that Coach Prime had had exactly zero off-campus home visits with recruits. And the article went on and quoted from coaches like Jackie Sherrill. You know, he said that he needed to see what it was like in the household and how they respected their mama. And even, well, you know, going back to Bill McCartney, they talked about Coach Mack, and he said that you recruit the mother and you want to see, you know, what they're like in the home environment and things like that. And Coach Prime, at his press conference, without even being asked about it, decided he wanted to talk about why he doesn't do home visits. Brad, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to the USA Today story and your reaction to Coach Prime having a rebuttal without even being asked for a rebuttal?
Whatever else we know about Coach Prime is he does read his press clippings, to use a very old phrase. he and his kids and his staff and his celebrity followers are all over stuff. So the fact that he's responding immediately after an article without being asked, I mean, that's just how it goes nowadays. We got female coaches responding to articles that haven't been published yet.
yes.
So the fact that he, you know, he knows it's unusual. He knows it's not how you do these things. The idea that Jackie Sherrill has something important or interesting to talk about at college football in 2024 is a fascinating one to me. And as and even Bill, this is different. You know everything about these kids because they put it out there. They're sending you tapes or tapes. They're sending you videos. you know, they're on social media. They know, we know everything there is. And NIL changes that. The transfer portal changes that. There's a reason that a lot of the old style coaches are not coaching anymore. There's a reason Jim Harbaugh's in the NFL. There's a reason Nick Saban's playing golf. What used to work doesn't work. And so am I surprised by it? A little bit. My concern has always been everybody else's concern. Is Prime distracted from his job as a coach, which includes recruiting, by everything else he's got going on? That's the way the article was written. The implication was Prime doesn't care. I think that's an overstatement. It's his second recruiting class, and people legitimately have noticed that it's not a big recruiting class for high schoolers. So I wasn't surprised he responded. I'm not shocked that this is the way he works. I'll be interested to see as he goes on if that position changes.
Okay. Well, Neil, one of the defenses that Coach Prime raised was that he is such a celebrity, that he is such a known entity, that if he goes to Miami or if he goes to IMG or if he goes to any town and goes to one high school to visit one kid, that he's going to make the other coaches and other high schools and the other kids feel slighted. He also made the argument that he didn't want Bobby Bowden in his house, so because his house was not anything to be proud of. So is that justification, or does that make sense to you that since Coach Prime can't visit every single recruit that he's after, it makes sense for him to have them come to him rather than him try and get out and visit and perhaps offend players and or coaches and or schools that he doesn't have time to visit?
Well, I guess my theory has always been he's doing it in a new way, as Brad has said. And he's setting a new standard using new techniques. And I think there is a point to be made, Stu, about what you said of Jackie Sherrill's approach seems a bit invasive to me and borderline offensive, is that he wanted to gauge the family. And, you know, a lot of kids may not feel comfortable with that and may feel intimidated by that. I think Prime brings him here. He gets essentially a twofer. The kids get to see Boulder. They get to spend time one-on-one with Coach Prime and the other coaches, but especially Coach Prime. That's a very efficient use of resources. And the kids still get one-on-one time with Coach Prime, which is the objective of the whole thing. The other part of it is, it seems that spending time traveling is kind of low productivity time. What Prime is doing with his public presence is he's recruiting all the time. It's an economies of scale thing that he can reach many kids at the same time without offending anyone by not giving them special attention, as you said. I think that's a very nice approach. It's experimental. It's different. It's new. Let's go with it. And I just had a question about Brad's comment, which is, what's a press clipping?
I'm sitting here looking at a mustache that is exactly as gray as my beard. So I ain't buying either of that, Neil.
I color it, Brad. It's really not that.
Oh, okay.
My loss of hair, that's you know, I'm shaving part of it. So
yeah. Neil, so, you and I are why we don't do this as a video, but
I was just gonna say, for anybody listening to the podcast wondering why we don't have a YouTube channel, now you know. So let's talk about a little football. Not that we have a lot of football to talk about, but was there anything, Brad, in Coach Prime's press conference, which of course is a lot of platitudes that everything's going great. Every team's bonding, got much better players, yada, yada, yada. I mean, can you just take whatever he said at his press conference and just insert another name for another coach in another conference and probably get the same language? Or is there anything in there that gave you optimism or pause for concern?
You know, what fascinates me is if you go back and listen to our spring preview and all the stories we said we'd ignore are the stories we got the first week. You know, so-and-so had a great day and this receiver ran a great pattern and that kind of stuff. They are being very careful about what's coming out. You know, obviously what you want from the thing you don't want is so-and-so's injured. Doesn't appear there were any significant injuries. It does appear that there's been some good statements about what's going on with the offense developing, understanding the new playbook, which is a big deal. I mean, it is probably number two after, can we find somebody to block? but other than that, no, this was platitudes. They're being very careful. I think the coaches, the position coaches, I appreciate them coming out. I think they're giving some good commentary, but this is way too early to know anything.
Okay. Well, Neil, I'll give you one quote that maybe has not much to do with this particular couple of weeks, but maybe looking ahead to the end of practice in the transfer portal. You know, he was asked if, you know, of course, is the team ahead of last year? And of course, he wasn't going to say, no, we're way behind. I don't know what's going on. I've been too busy on my book tour. Said, we're way ahead. You know what you have. Several other pieces are going to be added as soon as the spring is over. You know what's going to happen this summer. We already know. Some names you may not know, but we already do. So it's going to be phenomenal. It's got to be phenomenal. So are you excited about next couple of weeks about hearing how well the team is doing? Or are you already looking to April, end of April, and the transfer portal and all the other names are going to start drooling over once spring practice is over?
Well, with the possible exception of additions and subtractions to the roster, and as Brad said, injuries, I'm just setting the alarm for the morning of the spring game where we can come and actually see some of these guys and actually judge for ourselves how we're doing. You know, another possible exception would be when we do wake up that morning, is there going to be a quarterback race? At that point, we'll be able to see it for ourselves, but maybe an article to that effect. But otherwise, I am unconcerned. And I wanted to digress for a moment about the recruiting approach is, and without embracing a fallacy of composition, Prime's approach landed Seton, somebody everybody was after. So there has to be something that he's doing right to get a kid like that. And based on the quotes in the article in the camera, he seems like a humble, articulate, well thought out, well spoken kid. So we're lucky to have him, not just as a football player, but as a buff. I think he's going to be a great addition. And, you know, if Prime's going to bring in those kinds of kids with his approach, fine. Let's do it.
I can certainly see Jordan Seton be the face of the team in 25, even as an offensive lineman, you know, without Shadur, without Travis and stuff like that, that he's going to be kind of the go-to guy. And to you guys' point, you know, the Colorado recruiting class is 22nd in the nation with the transfers. And even, you know, that was before we got the three-star cornerback that we got this week out of Florida. So, yeah, again, it's like all the people on the message boards complaining about winning 26 games of the basketball team. You know, not that they didn't do it good enough. Oh, by the way, Colorado ranked 24th in the country in recruiting is not something we are used to. Thank you very much. Just full stop. Well, let's talk about the brand new coordinators. I guess Pat Shurmur technically is not really a new coordinator, Brad. I mean, he did have four games under his belt as coordinator last year, at least called the plays. not super successful, fewer points. And again, to the point of the national media, there was a whole CBS Sports article about Sean Lewis going from scapegoat to hero in going to San Diego State from, you know, being disgraced and unfairly kicked out the door by Coach Prime. So listening to Pat Shurmur, he's not a dynamic speaker, but I guess you don't necessarily need your offensive coordinator to be a dynamic speaker. But was there anything from his press conference that stood out to you, or was he excusing himself for the fact that his four games were four losses and that was just because Shador was hurt and we shouldn't judge him because of that?
What Shurmur is an all-time pro. As much as we like to talk about Dion does everything a new way, he went and found a guy who just is an old-time, down-the-line offensive coach. Now, Shurmur has had success elsewhere. He's had lack of success elsewhere. that's just the reality. I thought he was an interesting choice. Something weird happened in that offensive room last year. I don't know that we'll ever fully know what it was. I felt like Dion lost faith in Sean Lewis, and switching, it's one thing to switch coordinators in the middle of the year. That's bad. Switching coordinators back and forth with a confused line of authority, nobody's going to say that's the best way to do it. So I am really less concerned about what kind of offense Pat Shurmur is going to do and more concerned about if he's going to be the guy in charge. And it feels to me like, again, this is a weird relationship. Who does Dion trust his son and his son's future to? And it seems to be Shurmur, and it seems to be full-time. I don't think Shurmur's told us a dang thing about how he's going to run the offense. I don't think he's going to tell us a dang thing about how he's going to run the offense. I think he's going to want to do it his way. I think our execution will be better this year. I think that's probably where I appreciate Shurmur and his experience. But there's a lot still to learn about this. I hope that it is designed to get the ball out of Shador's hands a lot faster.
Yeah. Well, Neil, Shurmur talked about the four pillars of decision-making for quarterbacks. One, matchups. Two, space. Then numbers and leverage, which sounds perfectly good if you're, you know, writing stuff on a chalkboard. But to Brad's point, Shador Sanders is auditioning to be a top 10 pick. And obviously Coach Prime knew who Pat Shurmur was. He's not a new unknown entity. So do we just say, okay, Coach Prime may not have had his pick of all the offensive coordinator candidates in the planet, but he certainly had some say in who's going to take care of his kid and hopefully produce an offense that's going to showcase his son and make him a number one NFL draft pick. So is that all we need to know about Pat Shurmur? Is that Deion Sanders trusts him? Or is there a reason for healthy skepticism in your mind based upon what you know about Pat Shurmur, what you saw when he was a Bronco coach, and what you heard from him in the first press conference of the spring?
I'd like to sort of take everything at face value and make an assumption that last season that the OC had carte blanche to do what he wanted to do and with minimal interference. I know that's a hazardous assumption, and we don't know, as Brad said, it's a black box. We don't know who was really making the determination there. But I'll take statements like Shador saying he's much more comfortable in the new guy's offense, in Shurmur's offense, and that it's going to simplify things for him and help him make a quicker read, get rid of the ball more quickly. I like that. What I didn't like about the previous guy was his seeming stubbornness to do anything to help Shador with pass protection. On the other hand, Shurmur, when he was taking over games, tried new formations, new personnel groupings, bringing in a center, putting an eligible number on him, lining him up in the backfield as an extra blocker on passes and on runs. I like what I saw there, is that he is not wedded to a pure air raid, results be damned approach that our previous OC seemed to have. I think it's going to be more versatile. It's going to be more adaptive, that Shermer will probably try to mold his play calling, his schemes and such to what he has. I think the previous guy was trying to cram everybody into what he wanted to do, despite his public statements to the contrary. I think Shermer has a chance, really, to help the execution, as Brad said, and make this a better offense, philosophically, a more diverse offense that better uses the personnel that we have. And that's just kind of my projection based on my assumptions. But I'm going to be somewhat pleased if we come out in something other than a straight 4 or 5 wide lineup every time. I think the recruit that we have from tight end, the Colorado kid coming back from the desolation of Ohio State, they can play football.
Yeah.
Watching the film on this kid, he could be a player. And having Shermer with his NFL background where they actually use a tight end, that's a good thing. You know, so there are reasons to be hopeful. And I'll let it go at that.
Yeah. Well, to your point, you know, the Utah game with Ryan Staub, I think, is a good example of that. That in some respects, I thought that was the best offensive play calling game of the season, maybe after the first 3 games, that it's like, okay, I've got a freshman in there. We're going to huddle up. We're going to take 30 seconds to run a play. You know, we're going to do these simplified plays that this guy can run. And lo and behold, he was pretty successful at it. And, you know, going against the Utah defense that is pretty stout on the road, and gave the team a chance to win, which was kind of a surprise. So, Brad, you were nodding a lot with what Neil was saying. Do you want to move on to Robert Lewister? Or do you want to talk a little bit more about Pat Shermer?
No, I think Neil nailed it very well. I think Sean Lewis became enamored of the talent of Shedeur Sanders and had trouble seeing the rest of the offense around that.
Okay. Well, Neil, I'll start with you with Robert Livingston. Not probably the first choice. You know, he was asked about it at his press conference. He says, right person, right place, right time, which is fine when you're getting hired several months after the search began and several weeks after we were told we're going to get a splash hire to find somebody that we had to Google to figure out who he was. Of course, not going to tell us very much. He actually said in his press conference that he doesn't have a philosophy. He talked about having non-negotiables. Hardest playing team in the country. Okay, everybody says that. Great communicators. Everybody says that. I did like what he said about tribe mentality, that no job was too big or too small, that everybody had a role to play. And again, that's coach speak, but I like the concept of saying tribe mentality anyway. That one at least stuck out to me as being a positive. What were your takes on DC Livingston and what he wants to do, you know, for the University of Colorado's defense?
Well, to build on your comment, Stu, I like the notion of the tribe also, which is we have certain functions that need to be performed to benefit the entirety of the tribe. Everybody can't be a quarterback. Everybody can't be a star. We need certain jobs and functions to be well filled. And I interpreted that because I wanted to be a positive. The other thing is that he said that he will adapt his system or his philosophy. Well, he didn't really have a philosophy, he said, but he will adapt himself to what he has. And I hope that's really true. Two parts, because he's got some terrific talent, so he's really going to be able to show us what these kids can do. But he has some weak spots that he has to cover, at least right now, based upon what we know. And it's going to be a challenge for him to try to devise schemes and so on and substitution patterns to cover those weaknesses. The thing I worry about with Shermer, as well as less with Shermer, but more with Livingston, is Livingston's coming directly from the NFL, where it's full-time football and the schemes are complicated and there is limited time at this level to teach kids a system. And also these kids have less life experience. They have less football experience. So it's going to take them longer to learn something. So part of his adaptation needs to be simplified. Let the talented players do what they do and not try to overwhelm it by overthinking a scheme and making it too difficult for a defensive player just to play, just can't do it. So I hope that he adapts in that way.
Okay. Well, Brad, again, to Neil's point, I mean, came from the Cincinnati Bengals, been their secondary coach, you know, for like 8 or 9 years. And he talked about, with something a little scary to CU fans, talking about, you know, outside in kind of thing, where he's got the skill positions on the outside and you build your defense around that. Now, obviously, the personnel on the interior of the Colorado defense is suspect and will be continue to be suspect until proven otherwise. But are you concerned about that type of a quote, or you understand where he's coming from?
Well, I begin to think that tribe mentality means that even though you were recruited as a defensive back, you might have to play up front. So it's a reality. I mean, the bottom line is, if he's talking about outside in, it's because that's who he is. I mean, if he had, you know, Alfred Williams and Knavis McGee, he'd be talking about inside out. We got what we got is the reality. And you know, the fact that he's a defensive back expert, and I think, yeah, he is a defensive back expert. I think he understands those guys' ability. And I think he understands that playing in the Big 12, we've already talked about, we're going to play nickel and dime and quarter and 50 cent piece, I think, sometimes as our defense. So, you know, he's saying the things we expect him to say. He's acknowledging the talent, strength, and gaps that we have. And that's all, you know, to get even that much out of his first week of practice, you know, to expect him to say anything more is unusual. And I think this was more honest than I probably would have expected.
Yeah. Well, one of his quotes, Neil, was, in terms of metrics, it's always been the same thing to me. Yards don't equal points. If you want a great defense, you have to play great situationally. That's kind of a coach speak for bend but don't break kind of thing, that our defense is going to be giving up a lot of yards, but hopefully we'll shut them down in the red zone and we'll get turnovers and timely sacks. Be prepared to give up 400 yards of offense and 20 points a game, but our defense is going to give up points and I'm prepared for that, but we're going to do the best we can with what we got.
Well, I think the best way to interpret that is, we're going to cut down on gash plays, on 10 and 20 and 30 yard plays. We're not going to give up quick scores. So we'll give our offense a chance to rest and hopefully stay on the field long enough for the offense to make a mistake and kill their own drive. You know, everybody, I think it, all the coaches would say that we're going to bend but not break. Well, it's pretty hard to shift modes when you're inside your own 20 and suddenly you turn it up or you turn on this magic defense that's going to stop somebody. I think they need to be prepared to play stout, sound defense all the way through. And that means a balance between stopping the run and rushing the passer. He needs, I think, to organize a defense that is going to be fundamentally sound. And the rest of this stuff is just coach speak.
Okay. Well, we're going to get a lot more coach speak in the next couple of weeks, and we'll try and sift through and pick out the important parts as we go through the weeds and get the little bits and pieces that we get out of spring camp. At least the videos are there. And of course, even the videos are, you know, highly compromised to make sure they're not giving away anything. But at least there's some shots of players running around that we can look at that gives us some idea that the team is actually practicing. But while we wait for that and wait for the spring game on April 27th, we're still talking basketball, Colorado basketball, for the first time in, well, 11 years. Both the men's team and the women's team made the NCAA tournament. Brad, you want to talk a little bit about the men's team first? Or are you excited about the school record team wins? Or are you disappointed that this team didn't live up to its, as some fans would say, its potential and did not make it to the Sweet 16 or beyond?
I think we saw in March the team, I mean, you got to be excited about the last, about the run. I mean, we were a first four out kind of team, and then we took it into the championship of the Pac-12. I enjoyed watching how they played. Their second game, first to 102 wins, was as exciting a basketball game as you're going to see. We got to see guys that we really have grown to appreciate, KJ in particular. So I thought it was a lot of fun. There is what this team's going to look like next year, we have no idea. We've already got transfers. Our best players are probably going to go. Yeah, would we all love to see Cody Williams another year? Would you ever tell your son to turn down umpteen million dollars to go back and play in college another year? No. So enjoyed the men's team. They were a little frustrating at times, but you know, starting the middle of February, they were a lot of fun to watch. I understand people would have liked more. I would have too. I think Cody Williams did not live up to his potential, both because of injury and sometimes because of effort. You know, I love Eddie Lampkin. When he shows the effort, he's a lot of fun. And I hope he finds a place to play ball in the future that works out for him. So I was happy with the men's team. I was satisfied. We don't have Roy Smith or Mike Krzyzewski coaching our team. I think there probably is, to some extent, a cap on how far Tad Boyle can get us. 20-some wins, a couple games in the NCAA. Would I love to find the next Coach Krzyzewski? Yeah. I haven't seen him out there yet. I think Tad Boyle is safe. I think he probably should be safe. I think that we should enjoy the fact that he puts together a good teams, seems to recruit on a consistent basis, and just enjoy what we got.
Okay. Neil, I think the three of us are old enough that we're not going to be too cynical about having a team that even makes the NCAA tournament, and wins two games. First time since 1955 that CU's won two games in an NCAA tournament. And yet there are people that are not super excited about Tad Boyle's ceiling. Are you in that list of people that think that Colorado, now that the baseline of 20 wins a season and every other year getting into the NCAA tournament, it should be the floor for the program at the University of Colorado instead of the ceiling, and that it's in fact impossible to do better, and that Tad Boyle going into the Big 12 with is basically his entire starting lineup gone is going to sink into the depths of mediocrity once again?
Well, that's quite a question. I think that Tad Boyle has done a remarkable job at CU. There have been times in the past where CU has popped up once in a while and won a league championship or has made the tournament, the big dance. But for what he has done at this place that has not a great basketball tradition, I think has been tremendous. I think he has set all kinds of records for wins and other performance parameters that has been unequaled by any previous CU coach. I think he has changed the way he recruits, the way he coaches over the past 5 to 10 years. Say 5 years from now, had a team, a previous Boyle team, run into the difficulties that this year's team ran into, they would have quit and finished as a 500 team. But somehow the coaching staff was able to get these kids going, and they made a stand at USC when they were way down and just could have folded the tent and been okay with an NIT bid. But no, they came back and then they improved and built on that and built on that. And they kept going, kept compensating for injuries to keep people like Cody. We did a lot with a little, I think, this year. And I think people should give Tad Boyle credit. And for those who are criticizing him, it seems that they're forgetting that we're not doing Tad Boyle a favor by keeping him on here. I'm sure he has had multiple offers every year to go coach somewhere else for more money. Something that in this new era of college sports, that we have a coach that is loyal to the school at significant personal cost is something that's hard to find. And you latch onto something like that, you should keep it.
Okay. Well, I did a whole article on this. I mean, because I'm a big Tad fan. And to the naysayers, you know, obviously 26 wins was a school record, 16-1 at home, another school record. I don't know which stat, you know, career stat is most impressive about Tad, the fact that Colorado has 14 20 win seasons in its history and Tad has 10 of them, mm-hmm. or that Colorado has 60 postseason wins, including conference tournaments and postseason tournaments, 60 postseason wins in school history, and Tad has 32 of them. Or maybe the fact that in conference tournaments alone, you know, CU has 32 conference wins and Tad has 21 of those. His 32 postseason wins. Second on the list is Ricardo Patton with 8. So, kind of give you an idea of how ridiculously lopsided the record book is with regards to Colorado's success under Tad Boyle. And yet, Brad, you know, they're averaging 7,500 fans in the event center for 16-1. Only loss was a home loss to Arizona, of which, of course, after that game, everybody was calling for Tad's head. So
the failure to be competitive against Arizona is admittedly frustrating. And the fact that it may continue into our new conference is a bit dispiriting.
Yes.
So, I'll agree with that. Sure.
Yeah. So is it why isn't CU averaging 10,000 fans if this is a 26 win team, 16-1 at home, three NBA draftees potentially? And yet the fans just seem to think that this was an expected, maybe even a below expectation season.
You know, I don't understand, honestly. It's just, Neil said it, we're not a basketball school. We're going into a tougher conference, although nothing wrong with Pac-12 this year. So, you know, it will be interesting to see what happens. I think Tad's going to have to recruit a little bit differently. But I just, it's the same thing I always say. Tell me the guy that's better that's going to come to see you.
Yeah.
If Shaka Smart's not on his way to see you. You know, that's just.
You know, to your point, when Coach McCartney was in his last 3 or 4 years, I think there was a notion among CU fans that it's like, well, we've arrived. We can have Joe Blow coach the team and we're going to be contending for a national championship every year. And I thought we had a natural experiment that proved that to the contrary. And I think the same is true now with Coach Boyle. Is, I think your point is right on the money. Who's better that's actually going to come here and stay here and be able to succeed under the limitations that are facing CU basketball?
Yeah. So I guess for now, we'll just enjoy the fact that they did as much as they did and won as many games as they did. But speaking of winning, Brad, the CU women's team, as we speak, is still alive, heading to the Sweet 16 for the second straight year, winning on the road, literally on the road, on the opposing team's home floor to get into the Sweet 16 for the second year in a row, only to face Iowa for the second year in a row. What's impressive to you about the CU women's team, or what's daunting about the fact that they're going to be playing Iowa in front of a national audience and the Caitlin Clark mania?
It was kind of interesting. As the CU men went on a run, the CU women, who had been a top 10 team all season, ran into some problems, in part because while the men's Pac-12 is good, the women's Pac-12 is deadly. USC, UCLA, Stanford, Oregon State, all are excellent teams that are still in the tournament. You know, these are some tough teams. And it was a little frustrating to watch that for a minute, the CU women kind of forgot how to win in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Gave up some leads. Looked like it was the kind of team that was struggling coming into the tournament. And so I was very impressed with the way they've played the first two games of the tournament. Their second half against Kansas State has got to be one of the most frustrating halves of basketball I've ever seen imposed on a team. I mean, it was very close in the first half. It was a grinding battle. And then in the second half, it was just one-sided battle. You hold a basketball team, the number four seed, at home to 15 points. And by the end of that game, you could see Kansas State just had no idea how to run an offense.
Yeah.
Now, it was fascinating to watch. Listen, we are understandably underdogs to Iowa. Caitlin Clark is either the first or second best player in the women's game. And even against West Virginia, I watched all of that game. She looked stubborn. She looked confused. She looked stymied. West Virginia played great defense, and she scored 30.
Yeah.
But I watched that game, and I texted Stuart during the game. I said, J.R. Payne sitting there watching this game with her team saying, there's nothing to be scared of here. You, in order to beat Iowa, you have to slow down the game. You have to grind it out. You have to make them pay for every shot. And that's exactly what West Virginia did. And they stayed in the game until the end, until the fouls added up. It's exactly the game CU can play. And therefore, about an hour on Saturday, we are the center of not just women's basketball, but probably sports in the country. And I think this team can rise to it. We need to keep Tad Boyle. I would hope that Rick George, every time he walks past J.R. Payne, goes, oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that. That contract, we got to talk about that.
Stop by my office, yes.
Yeah, because they play hard. They're well-coached. And they did not exceed expectations this year because expectations were high, but they have matched them. And if they go in and lose to the number one seed against the number one player, things still hang their head high because I suspect they're going to play it tough.
Yeah. Neil, you have thoughts?
Well, I do, actually. And I admit I haven't followed the women's program as closely as others have, as you guys have. But it strikes me that their season is, in effect, a trilogy, like Lord of the Rings or that thing, which is, boy, they came out smoking the first third of the season. They rated as high as 5, and people were talking about them as a number one seed in the tournament. And then they had a rough patch where they were giving away leads, where they were losing to teams that perhaps they were not expected to lose to. And then in the last third, they've come and they've reestablished their style of play, reestablished the toughness that they have, and they're a team on the rise right now. So I think that's a testament to the heart of the players and to the skill of the coaches. And they have done a terrific job of bringing the team through a season. There's never a season in any sport where a team is going to start out beautifully and continue the whole season that way. There are going to be ups and downs. And it seems now that they're playing at this stage of the season where one wants to peak, they're playing their best ball.
Yeah. And when they lost in double overtime in the Pac-12 tournament to Oregon State, the third loss to Oregon State in the season, and lost the home court advantage in the March Madness, you thought, okay, they really aren't good. Because it seemed, again, you know, when the committee came out with its first rankings, CU was the number one seed, and they fell all the way to a number five seed and didn't get to have home court advantage in the first two rounds. You're like, wow, what a missed opportunity. blew that double overtime game against Oregon State in the Pac-12 tournament, cost them a number four seed. And now they have to go on the road. And they played, you know, before a capacity crowd, a sold out Kansas State crowd. And as you mentioned, Brad, you know, 15 points, not only in a quarter, 15 points in the second half scored by the Wildcats. So regardless of what happens on Saturday, again, yeah, they've done CU proud. And the men's team did CU proud. And we're going to probably talk a little bit about them in our next podcast, but we'll also have more football to talk at our next podcast. So ran a little bit long just talking about football and basketball, but not a bad way to go out. So thank you, gentlemen, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you both for listening to the podcast and for being a member of the Buff Nation. I hope you are subscribing to the podcast so you won't miss any of the upcoming episodes. We have partnered with Mile High Sports and are pleased to be part of their podcast network. As always, you can find the See You at the Game podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and other podcast sites. Or, if you're not a fan of downloading podcasts, all of the episodes can be listened to at the See You at the Game website. I'll be back in 2 weeks with Neil and Brad, when we will be taking a look at developments during spring practices and look ahead to CU's spring game on April 27th. Until then, be well, stay safe, and go Buffs!
Thank you for listening to our See You at the Game podcast. For links to articles and stories referenced in this podcast, go to cuatthegame.com. That's the letter C, the letter U, at thegame.com. If you have comments or suggestions, you can leave them on the website or send an email to cuatthegame@gmail.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to subscribe and share it with your fellow Buff fans. Until next time, when we will again see you at the game.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.